I'm Ferdinand Kutzer from Kutzer Farms in Atkins, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Newly released numbers show the Texas Panhandle wildfires resulted in a nine-figure loss for agriculture. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
Farmers and ranchers on the South Plains of West Texas are still in need of more spring moisture. Meanwhile, corn planting has begun in the region. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and we'll go to Lubbock for more on Texas Ag Today.
House and Senate Agriculture Committee leaders have released dueling frameworks for the 2024 Farm Bill. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Kerry Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. Preliminary estimates are in on Texas Panhandle wildfire losses to agriculture. James Hunt tells us the number reaches nine figures.
Following the massive Texas Panhandle wildfires that broke out in late February, it's been well understood that the road to recovery will be a long one. But now Texas A&M AgriLife has released a new batch of numbers that help clarify the total impact on our region's agriculture. I talked with D.D. Jones, one of the AgriLife economists who worked with other agriculture experts to come up with what Jones calls a reasonable estimate.
I say reasonable because it's probably a little on the conservative end, but we wanted to make sure that everything that we came up with could come from a documented source. And so after months of pretty exhaustive research and number crunching, we came up with an agriculture loss of about $123
million. So $123 million, that's an agricultural loss. So I would imagine, without asking you to commit to a specific number, the loss to the overall economy in this region is much larger.
I think that's absolutely true. Like I said, this is just for our agriculture. So we're talking about the fencing that was lost and the grazing that was lost and the cattle that was lost. But there's a whole other community component because hundreds of houses burned down. And so once we factor that in there, and then we also have kind of an inflation factor where we look at this is just direct losses. If we factor in how that's going to affect the region, because suddenly those ranchers may not have as much money as they normally would have to come into town and buy goods and services. So if we look at a regional and state impact, then it's going to be considerably higher than that.
Going back to the specific figure for agricultural losses, that $123 million estimate is labeled preliminary. The sum is likely to grow as more losses are revealed over time. More from economist D.D. Jones tomorrow. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Will there be any type of loss program for dairy farmers affected by H5N1?
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says it is difficult to tell right now if there will be an indemnity program for dairy producers affected by H5N1.
I think the amount of milk that has been lost as a result of the virus itself, in other words, the virus impacted the quality of milk that was being produced, and that was an indication or symptom, relatively small, not a large amount. Pretty difficult, given the small nature of that.
Vilsack said what is of great interest right now to USDA is whether there is a residual impact on affected cattle. He said they're going to need help from affected dairy farmers to determine that to be able to justify an indemnity program. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
May is here and it's time to plant cotton in the Texas Panhandle and Southern Plains.
With decent spring rains this year, weed control should be on everyone's mind, according to BASF agronomist Adam Hickson in Lubbock.
You have some soil moisture there, you're going to get those weeds germinated, and we need to be proactive and make sure that we're getting our residual herbicides down. A lot of those things that are going out right now are what I call our yellow herbicides as a early pre-plant application. And then the prime time to control your weeds is right behind the planter. That is so important. And with good soil moisture, we'll get those residuals nice and activated. And hopefully they'll last a long time, a good, 4 weeks, and then a good overlapping residual in season once that cotton hits, first true leaf.
Hickson says it will be important to stay ahead of weeds throughout the growing season. Farmers and ranchers on the South Plains of West Texas could use some rain. Tom Nicoletti visits with a Lubbock area farmer.
On the South Plains of West Texas, Eddie Griffiths is standing by to give us the latest report on what agricultural producers are doing. They're still low on moisture for their crops, Eddie, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're in better position probably than maybe a year ago as far as when we started planting, but still need more moisture. There's moisture in the profile, but to get this thing started out right, we could use some more good rainfall, get some of those spring rains in here to help build that profile up so we can get adequate germination. You know, as far as cotton is concerned, we're still a little cool for that. We have seen some planters running, corn being put in the ground. Temperatures are gradually starting to warm up, but not nearly as warm as we'd like to see them start planting cotton at this time. But probably the main concern, Tom, is try to get out there and get irrigation on the crop prior to planting where we have irrigation. And for that dry land crop, which, we're probably half or a little over half that is dry land in this area. So much needed rainfall would be very beneficial for that.
What about the termination of cover crops? How's that going along?
Well, we're seeing termination of the wheat, rye, whatever crop they have out there as far as a cover crop to keep the soil in place. Also seeing lots of baling of a lot of that cover crop. Guys are going out there cutting it down and baling it up. Then you're starting to see what wheat crop is probably going to be going to harvest at this time. Possibly have a pretty decent wheat crop as far as grain is concerned.
All right, what else is going on up there in your area?
Well, guys are just mainly getting ready to start planting cotton, get those planters ready, cultivation out in the field. They're trying to run sweeps through there, get it as clean as possible, because the main goal of cotton is to start out cleaner for any crop, for that matter. All in all, things look good here in the Lubbock surrounding area. If we could just get a little more moisture coming this way.
Eddie, thanks for your report.
Thank you, Tom.
That's Eddie Griffiths. He's reporting for us today from West Texas.
I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
House and Senate Agriculture Committee leaders have released dueling frameworks for the Farm Bill. Jessica Domel has the story.
After years of work, the leaders of both the House and the Senate Agriculture Committees have finally revealed their separate Farm Bill frameworks. The framework released by House Agriculture Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson calls for an increase in support for the price loss coverage and agriculture risk coverage programs to account for inflation and rising costs of production. It also provides authority to expand base acres to include producers who currently do not participate in ARC or PLC. It modernizes marketing loans and sugar policy, bolsters dairy programs, and enhances standing disaster programs and expands eligibility for assistance.
My goal from the beginning was to build a farm bill, to write a farm bill that reflected the voices of American agriculture outside the Beltway of Washington. And we have done that. In its structure, it is a strong bipartisan bill and really reflecting the needs and the priorities of American agriculture, because my priorities are the priorities of the hardworking families that produce and process food and fiber, building material, energy resources, and really our rural communities, because as you all know, this farm bill within those 12 titles, they're just things that relate to having a robust rural economy.
The framework released by Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow says major commodities will see at least a 5% increase in reference prices during the 2024 farm bill, with many seeing 10 to 15% increases.
I just want you to know that we're serious. I'm serious. My members are serious. You know that we're stuck right now on some negotiations. I hope this helps free that, because our farmers need the certainty of a five-year farm bill, I think rural communities need that as well. So we're doing this within the context of three major goals: keeping farmers farming, keeping families fed, and keeping rural communities strong. And that's the framework that we are using.
The Senate Democrats' framework would lower the threshold for trigger payments for all covered commodities under ARC and provide protection for sugar farmers by adjusting loan rates to account for increases in production costs. Stabenow said her framework also includes the first ever specialty crop insurance subtitle that builds on years of progress in expanding risk management options for fruits, vegetables, nuts, and other specialty crop growers. The House Ag Committee is set to mark up Thompson's Farm Bill draft May 23rd. The Senate Ag Committee has not yet announced a date for markup. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Our food supply in the U.S. is the safest in the world, and it is for home gardeners if we choose correctly to control pests properly. Please join me, John Begnaud, as we talk about home gardening pest control in Texas.
And it's the time of year for rain rot to occur in horses. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feeds, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county farm bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Broadcasting from a padded room in the basement of the Texas Farm Bureau World Headquarters, here's Carrie Martin with more Texas Ag Today.
Controlling pests properly will help produce safe food from your garden. Horticulturalist John Begnaud reports from San Angelo.
Pest control in gardening has come a long way. If you look at the early days when people had products that they used and they thought they were safe, but now they turn out that they're not so safe. And then in the United States, for instance, it's been removed. Those products have been taken off the market and gone. And so not so much maybe in the rest of the world, but in the United States, they have. So if you and I were going to garden today, and we started planting vegetables and they had aphids or they had other critters, we do things like identify the pest and decide whether we want to control them or pull the plant out or whether we want to just replant. We have a lot of choices. But when we do choose a product, we choose one that's going to be either biological, in other words, it occurs naturally. That is the first line of defense. And in integrated pest management, we also have some home remedies. Sometimes you see on the internet they do work or they don't work, and you have to do your research carefully there. Or we do manufactured products that have been proven safe and manufactured by companies, and they may even actually be a chemical company. And it may be not an organic compound, but it is safe, proven safe. And so we get to make those choices as home gardeners. Well, farmers do the same thing. They don't want to raise a product that's going to show a red flag and not get sold or not get purchased from them. So the whole situation in the United States is different than it is in many countries of the world. We saw that in a recent consumer report about vegetables and fruits coming into the United States with residue of products that have been banned for years in this country. And so we should slap ourselves on the back and be thankful that our farmers can make the right choices. And if you have some of those old products, I saw a jar of DDT the other day. You don't just open the cap and pour it out on the ground. You look for some of these days where these county extension offices offer opportunities to properly dispose of those. And they occur occasionally in your area almost every year. So look for those and just be sure that we take care of the environment in the best way that we can. So remember, the United States and Texas farmers, along with home gardeners, are producing the safest food supply in the world.
This is John Begnaud reporting for Texas Ag Today from San Angelo.
It's the time of year for rain rot to occur in horses. Dr. Bob Judd has more on that disease.
Rain scald or rain rot is a condition in horses characterized by crust and mats of hair that resemble small paintbrushes when the scabs are pulled off. After removing the scabs, the skin is soft, moist, and yellow-tinged due to the infection. The lesions typically occur on the back, but also commonly occur on the neck, face, and legs, and there may be swelling and pain associated with lesions on the lower legs. Removing the scabs is very painful and requires sedation, but is important as the scabs track infection. I usually apply an antiseptic shampoo to the affected areas and allow the shampoo to soften the scabs for at least an hour, then sedate the horse and remove the scabs. The disease is caused by the bacterial organism Dermatophilus, and the organism cannot penetrate healthy skin, so there has to be some factor to damage the skin. The skin can be damaged by biting insects, allergy and scratching, and constant moisture. When the skin is moist and damaged, the organism proliferates rapidly and can cause significant disease in just 24 hours. Your veterinarian can take a sample of the crust and find the bacteria that causes the disease under the microscope. Treatment involves removing the crust as the condition will not heal without this occurring, and an anti-infective shampoo containing chlorhexidine should be used to kill the infection. You can also use lime sulfur dip to kill the infection. Shampooing is required as needed to remove the dead and infected tissue as it sloughs off. After scabs are removed, application of an anti-infective cream with cortisone may be helpful. With severe cases, oral or injectable antibiotics may be required in fighting this infection.
I'm Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Tuesday. We had a higher close in the cattle complex. Live cattle futures getting a boost from higher boxed beef values. June live cattle up 65 cents, closing at 177.62. The August up $1.10, 175.52. With October live cattle up $1.05, 178.92. Feeder cattle closing higher also. May feeders up 75 cents, 242.15. The August up $1.55, 254.42. With September feeder cattle up $1.57, 255.45. Cash-fed cattle market seeing just a few sales here early in the week. About 2,500 head reported at steady money, 185. Other than that, everything else still quiet. Boxed beef, higher choice, up $1.60, $300.36. Select up $3.16 at $292.91. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Brian Lintzman, Seguin Cattle Company, sales them on Wednesday. Brian, how'd it turn out?
Ended up with 570 head of cattle. The biggest swing we saw is on these bigger heifers, had a lot of big cattle today. You know, I think we kind of had that little glut where them little calves were bringing so much, we sold all the little calves off, but had a lot of those 7 to 8 weight cattle and those big heifers, you know, like I said, we saw them get a little cheaper, but they are fleshy, but they're still dollaring out plenty of money. Those 2 to 3 weight steers, 260 to 338, 3 to 4 weight, 235. 5 to 3 to 4, 4 to 5 weights, 235 to 310, 5 to 6 weights, 231 to 288, 6 to 7 weights, 233 to 274, with 7 to 8 weight ears, 224 to 240. Get to the heifer May, 2 to 3 weight heifers, 228 315, 3 to 4 weight, 220 to 305, 4 to 5 weights, 225 to 276, 5 to 6 weights, 205 251, with 6 to 7 weight heifers, 210 to 230. Cows kind of unchanged. Top end of the packer cows, 135 today. Top end of the bulls, 156. Had a few palpated cows from 6 to 1,000 with a few pairs up 950 to 2,200. That was kind of the cattle market. Sheep and goats, 951 head today. I would call it a tick softer maybe, but I mean, that's just numbers. And top end of the nanny, $300 today. Kid goats bringing from 280 to 335. Door for ewes, 155 on the top end. With the door heifer lambs bringing from $1.80 to $2.85. So, like I said, just not a bad day.
Well, I'm glad you had a good day. Going to have a better next week. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, Brian.
You can give us a call at 830-379-9955, or you can call me on my cell phone, 830-305-0652.
Neighbor, that's it for Walking the Pens. I'm Larry Marble. Thanks so much for listening to the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. Good day to you.
Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finished higher. May hogs up 35 cents, 92.52. June hogs up 15 at 98.32. Class 3 milk was lower. Nearby May milk down 10 cents, 18.33 a hundredweight, while June milk was down 2 at 19.43 a hundred. Cotton managed a higher close. Traders watching the weather, the 6 to 10-day forecast showing for below to much below normal temperatures for most of the U.S. Cotton Belt. Rain here in Texas slightly above average for the next 6 to 10 days, but much above average for the Southeast. We close with July cotton up 44 points, 77.50. October up 49, 76.65. December cotton up 44 at 75.75 cents. Both corn and wheat pulled back from the sharp gains we had earlier in the week. Corn planting remains a bit behind thanks to rains in the Corn Belt. Late Monday, USDA said 36% of the U.S. corn crop now planted. That is down from the five-year average of 39% for this time of year. July corn down 2 cents, closing at 4.67 a bushel. September corn down a quarter penny, 4.76 and a half. Wheat market pulled back as well, double-digit losses in hard and soft wheat. USDA saying 50% of the nation's winter wheat crop now rated good to excellent, much better than last year's 29% at this same time. Kansas has the highest poor to very poor rating on their wheat crop, 33% rated in that poor to very poor category. July Kansas City wheat down 11 and a quarter, 6.64 a bushel. July Chicago wheat down 6 at 642 and 3 quarters. In the energy markets, June natural gas up a penny at 220. June West Texas crude unchanged, 78.48 a barrel. The financial markets narrowly mixed. The Dow up 41 points, 38,893. The NASDAQ down 19, 16,329. The S&P up 5 at 5,186. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.